half in the group. I do love these pods. They're so personal. And people keep on saying, oh, I almost didn't click. I almost didn't click, but so glad I did. Yeah, so yeah, I'm very glad that that's what's happening. So, earlier today, for those who were not here, Bodhi Leela gave a wide-ranging talk on linking the poem, theme of the retreat, with meditation. She's following the ethics, meditation, wisdom kind of thread. Managed to fit into the field Doctor Who, D.T. Suzuki, and Ella Fitzgerald. I think I just applaud that. It kind of made me think about my ultimate Woodstock Dharma lineup. Anyway, so among other things, so the meditation is the main focus. She did ask us quite a few pertinent questions. Why we meditate, what we think meditation is. Are we doing it to fix samsara or actually transform? She was encouraging us to think of the field as a field of potential where the possibility is endless. And in a way, linking that to the, was it the TARDIS, Bodhi Leela? I don't know, I don't watch Doctor Who. Whatever that thing is where it's bigger on the inside than on the outside.
Yes, I'm the TARDIS.
TARDIS.
Anywhere in time and space.
Anywhere in time and space. So that's the potential, really. That is the potential of our practice. So if you have any questions for Bodhi Leela or even reflections, experiences coming up in meditation, and yeah, this is also a good place for that. And I know 43 other people are watching you you say that, but it really is a very welcome to explore that. And again, unmute and just speak into this space, this beyond time and space kind of space. Or if you prefer, write me something in the chat box and I'll see what I can do.
Hello, it's Rachel. Rachel, I'm the budgie. Bodhi Leela, it's not really a question, but I just loved your comment about the adventure of meditation. Because for me, it's my practice has been very open and creative. I learnt the two practices, the framework, very early on, but I was equally given permission by my teacher, Dana Priya, to make things my own, and so off I went. And whilst the adventure has had its kind of scary moments, I've been fortunate enough to have kind of courage and curiosity of life in a field, opening, lying in field and witnessing and watching grasshoppers and listening to them and watching their behaviour, to be patient enough to sit and watch my practice, my meditation. And so your talk really kind of gave me permission to carry on, and it kind of endorsed my practice, and I'm really grateful to you for bringing that in. And I'm currently teaching my budgie to say my cage is bigger on the inside because of my lifelong following of Doctor Who. So thank you for what you've shared with us today.
Thank you, Rachel. And I'm so glad that you had a teacher who gave you that permission and that you went with it. And I think that does take a lot of courage to do that. I think I noticed that people really like you to be told what to do and to have really sort of fixed, you do this, you do that, you do that, particularly starting out. So to have the framework and then just go off and explore and make it your own, I think that's fantastic. And well done. And invitation to everybody else, you know, to go out and make your meditation practice your own and explore, have an adventure if you haven't already.
Okay, no questions in the chat box just yet. So anyone else would like to ask a question?
Hi, Sophie, it's Sanjay. And I've got a question for Paramandana related to yesterday's talk, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
The part that, well, lots of it really resonated with me, in particular, the phrase that Paramandi used, which was around the reconstitution of the psyche around the new archetype. And I think for me, it feels like for the last year or so, or maybe more, I've been going through that in some way. And I think the last 6 months, probably an acceleration of that. And it's quite unsettling in many ways. But at the same time, it feels like there's a sense of adventure around it, where it feels quite exciting. And I think what I'm struggling with is how to integrate that with what feels like now, what's becoming the past, in that relationships, for example. So mostly related to family, certain members of family that I'm now seeing are not healthy, and or healthy relationships, and just other things like, I mean, career about a year or so ago, I had to make a change, and coming up now is I'm thinking, oh, do I want to be living where I'm living? So it feels like there's waves, and it's like, how do I ride those waves? And the temptation is to go back to what's comfortable and cling on to that, but it doesn't feel like that's what my heart wants. So I guess the question is how to integrate that change which seems like it's coming, into the current reality or the current state.
Wow. I don't know that I can answer that, really. I mean, the thing is, in a way, I think you can. I don't know how actively you want to try and work with it. I mean, you know, one possibility is that you get into some kind of dialogue with some image of the archetype that you think is constituting itself. You know, so your more conscious mind is starting to actually, you know, your ego consciousness is actually getting into dialogue with this imaginal figure, archetypal figure, if it is constituting as a figure. I don't know, you know, it depends how it's manifesting for you in a way. I think the things with archetype, really, yes. I mean, in a way, I'm very reluctant to give any generalized advice. Do you know what I mean? It's more or less I'd have to know a bit more about what's actually going on. You know, I mean, usually I think it's more or less the same advice as I'd give in a general sense to meditation in general, you know, try and relax, stay aware and kind, and try and relax. And in a sense, the archetype will have its way with you, you know. I think this is the thing, we tend to think we can control these archetypal forces. We can't control them. If we act to suppress them, they will still come out, but they will tend to come out negatively or in aberrant ways. They will have their way with us. So the best we can do really is to try and get into some kind of dialogue with them, you know, a sort of more active dialogue, you know, recognize that you've got a kind of ego consciousness that can start dialoguing. But the thing is that the archetype is really in charge, if you see what I mean. Where our fantasy, our experiences, our ego consciousness is in charge, which, you know, if you actually look at people's lives, particularly retrospectively, you can see that actually most of us, most of the time, are in the grip of largely unconscious forces moving through us. And we're most successful when we do that with as much awareness and kindness as possible. But see, the question is, I suppose the underlying question is, it's quite similar to what Bodhilila was asking this morning, really. You know, how do we understand our life? I mean, I suppose these days I tend to think that you're here to manifest a particular, how can I put this? You were in the sort of Greek way, the sort of classical Greek would have said, you know, you have a daemon, you have a calling. And actually your life is about manifesting your calling. But your calling is not usually, or is not necessarily, not normally, what your ego wants. So again, we've got this sort of idea of surrendering to something which is larger than our conscious, you know, larger than what we can consciously control. But all these things happen on such different levels, because I'm hoping and I'm feeling that actually there's an archetype of change, not only in individuals, but in culture. I think that's how I started out this retreat, suggesting that maybe what's gone on recently in the last few months is a possibility for a great archetypal change, which isn't just individual, you know, it's more collective. But anyway, I don't think I should say much more than that without sort of digging into it with, you know, I'd have to kind of dig into it with you, I think. So.
That's great. Yeah, thanks, Paramahansa. That's great, and I think that resonates. And I think for me, it's I think my conscious mind and potentially ego wants to be in control of everything. So I think it's about letting go for me as well. And like you said, just letting go and see what happens. And I think that's fine. And I think a reflection of even meditation, where I'm trying to control that to some extent. But I think generally that's come from my upbringing and not feeling safe, I think, in the environment that I grew up in, and therefore then wanting to control everything. So you're right. I think naturally it does feel like I should just let go, like you said, and go with it.
Yeah. I mean, the question I tend to ask myself these days is, what does life want with me? You know, not what do I want with life, but what does life want with me? Why am I here? What does life want with me? So it's flipping it around, really, inverting like normal, thinking, what am I here for? What does life want? Why is life bothered to manifest as me? What does it want? What does it want to express through this vessel of me in the world?
And what's the answer? What do you come up with, Paramandana, just out of curiosity? What does life want from you?
That's a very personal question.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm pulling your leg.
Okay.
I don't know that. I don't know that I've come up with anything definite, but I have a feeling, and funny enough, and I say this to most people, I feel the calling is most often revealed in childhood. And my childhood calling was to be a painter. A young calling. This was, I don't really remember it. I only remember it with my grandfather, who died before I was six, definitely, and maybe this wooden artist palette, because I was so obsessed as a very young child as being to be a painter. So I don't take that literally. But I do understand my calling in those terms. So it, to me, it's something about trying to communicate beauty or meaning, you know? I feel that's what life wants for me. So I haven't taken that childhood thing literally, but I have taken it, if you see what I mean, the spirit of it, that's what it seems to me.
Okay, thank you.
Just coming back to Sanjay, I mean, I think this is all really fantastic stuff and really helpful, but we're not always, when we're operating everyday life, in turn touch with the archetypes or clear about the archetypes, but there's also just having a dharmic perspective of conditions changing, and in dependence on those conditions changing, you're different, you're changing, you need to come into a different relationship, you know, around your work, around your family, and around others, yeah? And I don't think it's necessarily a choice, because you have changed. You know, you can't make yourself go back to how you were before, even if you sort of go through the motions and act like you have changed. You know, so in a way it's more about, well, this has changed, so then what is going to arise as a result of you changing, you know, and that will reveal itself and emerge over time.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you both.
I think people are really getting their money's worth on these answers, to be honest. They're great. Thank you for your question. There's nothing lined up in the chat box, so it's open to the spoken question.
Hi, I have a question.
Great.
So I've been really impressed with West London Buddhist Society and Bodhilila and Paramananda and all our teachers here. So I did some Googling, and I came across a video, Paramananda, that you're explaining in a really brief snippet that meditation helps us act from our values. And I wondered if you could give a brief insight into that. Really struck me as something quite significant. So I wondered if you could give a bit of an insight on what was meant by that.
Did I look quite a lot younger in that video?
You had hair, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just I don't remember the context.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I would sort of agree with that, but I think in a lot of ways, you know, Bodhilila, you know, talked about that when she was talking about ethics, you know, which is another, in a way, another. I think a lot of people start off meditation because they want to calm down and de-stress and blah blah blah, which of course is completely legitimate, yeah. Mm-hmm. But they end up because meditation, at least if done in a fairly open sort of way that's been suggested here, meditation will help you contact what matters to you, you know, and so it will make that more likely to be emergent, you know, more likely to be a force in your life. You know, we wake up, that's the Buddha, isn't it? Awaken, you know, what's he awakened to? He's awakened to his own heart, isn't he, really? And we wake up to our own, what we really, what's meaningful to us, you know, what we care about, you know. And it's a bit scary, of course. You know, the Tibetans have this wonderful one of my favorite expressions, a little saying. And they say, well, you can't wake up someone who's only pretending to be asleep. And I think that's a lot of us pretend that we're asleep because we do actually know what matters to us, don't we? We do know what, but you know, it takes a lot of courage sometimes. And I think one thing that meditation can do is encourage us, you know, give us courage, give us heart, you know, give us heart to do what we want, you know, what we, but not what we want to do, because that's, but what we know we're here to do, or what our values inform us, you know. Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's why Buddhism's always, you know, meditation alone is not really enough, is it? You know, we need value, we need ethics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that helps, but I don't really know what I'm going on about.
Yeah, very helpful. I appreciate that.
I mean, I'd agree with all of that, though. I do think sometimes we don't know. I mean, certainly I was very, very confused. And
meditation helped, didn't it?
Yeah, I know. But that, I'm saying, you know, you think we always know, and I think I didn't know. And it's been through doing a lot of meditation practice and discovering the Dharma and then doing other things like body work and counselling that I kind of got to that place. But yeah, I think also that whole thing about, I think when I first started meditating, well, I learned by accident because I happened to be on a weekend that I thought was a feminist consciousness raising weekend, and actually it was run by a couple of Buddhists and they taught us to meditate. But I think initially I just thought it would be a way of, you know, a bit like the de-stressing, a way of relaxing. So if I fell asleep, I thought that was a result, you know. And then I kind of realized I could be a bit more focused or a bit more aware. There were those things that I did, and then I discovered I could be more creative. And then I discovered that there are lots of parallels with what was happening in meditation, with what was happening when I was doing massage and meditation, massage and counseling and therapy and things like that. And there was a whole period when I was thinking, well, what's the difference between what's happening in my meditation, what's happening in my therapy sessions, you know? And actually the Dharma for me brought a whole big difference, because it wasn't just about fixing how I was feeling or making myself feel better or, you know, understanding a pattern and blaming my parents for something that happened or what I was doing now, kind of thing. It was a sense of that sense of waking up, waking the heart and mind, and seeing through those conditionings, letting go of those conditions, that kind of sense of liberation and freedom that is often talked about in Buddhism. For me, that is now one of the reasons why I meditate. I don't sit down thinking, well, I'm going to get liberated, but it is an underlying thing that I value, because I have experienced it as being very liberating. I have experienced myself getting more in touch with what's mattered for me and what's more meaningful for me. I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now otherwise. And sometimes that's uncomfortable, isn't it? Because you've got a whole life built up around being a certain kind of person, doing certain kinds of things. And it's not easy to change. You might have family, you might have all kinds of other stuff that might find it really difficult. You might have all kinds of commitments, responsibilities. I remember, immediately before I came to the West London Buddhist Centre, I was a teacher. I'd been working as a nursery manager, and I'd come sort of in a sort of managerial position, and working in state schools. I mean, I love the kids and I kind of like working with the families, but there was so much else that was really distressing and painful and frustrating. And I was getting myself quite ill as a result of it, actually. And for some people, it looked like I was completely crazy, because like my income became like a third of it when I came and worked for the Buddhist Center, and whole lot of stuff around sort of, to certain people, loss of status and all those kinds of things. But I've been so happy, and I've discovered myself, and I felt much more fulfilled as a result of that. You know, I have usually tried to follow my heart at different times. So I've gone through lots of different careers, you know, starting out as a classical musician, but also being a massage therapist and healer, being a counselor, being a classroom assistant, being a teacher, and now working at the center, and then, yeah, more recently becoming the chair of the center, which is something that never in a million years is something that I would have thought I would do. But again, it's like you don't always know where you're going. You're sort of following the path and see where it takes you. if you just and it's not just as Paramahansa was saying about doing what you want, because I think we can sometimes confuse intuition with preference. You know, there's things that we like and we think, oh yes, that justifies us doing it because it's my intuition, but actually sometimes it's just that it's what we want, you know, going back to the craving and the aversion and that. But I think with meditation, we become much more aware of ourselves really intimately, of all our conditioning, all our views, all our reactiveness, all our kind of patterns. And from that place, we have much more choice. Mm-hmm. Anyway, just some thoughts.
Perhaps I could come in on the intuition preference aspect. I'm not sure if we've got, have we got time for another question?
Yeah.
And it's to do with that ascendant or descending place. So, you know, to the both of you really, that sometimes when I'm in a place, say, of less energy, and I'm neither doing one nor the other, and I'm, you know, like, it's sort of like, how would I know which one, you know, are there any signs to look for? Which is the better way to put my focus?
Well, I think we don't always know. I think that's, again, we want that certainty. And if I think about choices I've made in my life, often I've made them thinking it's on one basis, but actually it was probably, as Palmer was saying, coming from much more unconscious motivations. And, you know, things that on one level might have been disastrous and I made mistakes and I made really bad decisions, but they have also sometimes ended up in real transformation and change. So in terms of what's positive conditions, what's negative conditions, my perspective on that has completely changed, you know, over the years and through Buddhist practice, because, you know, I used to identify as being a victim and this happened to me and that happened to me and all this kind of stuff. And this was really difficult. But actually, I think all of that and working with all of that has made me who I am now and made me more able to deal with things, more able to empathize, understand other people. And there is that thing actually that sometimes the difficult and the painful stuff is a catalyst for growth and change. Not to say that we should, you know, want that to happen, but when it does happen, it's always an opportunity. So I'm not really answering your question, am I? I guess I feel that we can't really know, and then you just have to do the best you can and then see what happens and then work with that.
Hey, it sounds like if we expect a linear trajectory in meditation, we're in trouble. Snuck in an answer there. Going above and beyond my role. Actually, okay, we've got 4 minutes left. I think there is time for one more question. Rachel did ask me if there was time. If you're happy to, you can go for it, yeah.
It's a quick question for Bodhi Leela. I had some sad news at the start of the week about a friend who died, and I'd noticed actually, although my heart is open and very tender around the death of my friend, it seems that this part of grief has attached to every other part of grief that I've ever known, and that snowball of grief seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And while you've suggested while my practice and what you've been talking about today answers about craving and aversion, and this is what I don't want, this snowball of grief seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger as I go through my life. And particularly about the loss of my mobility over 50 years, and then what will the next 50 years hold? It's a bit of a big question, actually, isn't it? How do I need to get cosmically bigger hands to hold this massive snowball?
Well, I think it is just one of the things that happens, doesn't it, that when we have a loss, it does put us in touch with all our past losses. But I think if there's stuff that, in a way, hasn't been, I don't know how much you've allowed yourself to grieve through all those losses, in the past, how much you've worked with them, because I think when you don't, they become bigger and bigger and bigger. I know for me, I had that for many, many years. And I lived my whole life around trying to avoid any kind of loss, which would mean like not connecting with people, not doing things just because I would be scared of losing them. And it wasn't until I started to allow myself to grieve, you know, and sometimes we can hold grief for years, you know, 20, 30 years, and then you know, you finally allow yourself to, you know, and it's just like it happened just yesterday, isn't it? You know, and then I think also having more of a Dharmic perspective, and that happened for me in a particular meditation where I was reflecting a bit on impermanence, and then I kind of just saw that rather than being like in a state about all the people that I'd lost or had died and all this kind of stuff, that this was inevitable, you know. One thing we do know is that everything is going to die, you know, even though my ego doesn't like to admit that, you know, or admit that I will die, for instance. But that is a truth. So when you can actually align yourself with reality, see things as they are, on a deep level, not just on an intellectual level, then that makes a big change. And I think also for me, as a result of that, and also the perspective of conditionality and impermanence, there's something about, well, wasn't I lucky to have had those people in my life? So turning it around, appreciating them, grieving them with appreciation. And yeah, you still lose. When you've lost someone, you're not going to stop missing them. You're not going to, you know. But it's, can you do that in a different kind of context, in a different way, and hold it in a different way for me?
Thank you. Thank
you for your question, Rachel, sharing that with us. And the response, Bodhilila, I think the budgie is also appreciating. Beautiful reply. Okay, so we're at 5:30 already. So that's it for today. As ever, before you go, you can write your question in the chat box or email teaching@westlondonbuddhacentre.com. And they, as you know, they do feed into the next day's teaching, as Bodhilila responded to the cosmic curiosity through the direction of Doctor Who, which was great. So thank you everyone for your questions and your reflections. That's it from me. Have a good evening. And I'm passing over to Praninita, I guess. Yeah, okay.
I'm just going to unmute everyone, and we'll see you tomorrow morning for our meditation.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, from Eileen. Thank you.
Bye, Eileen. Bye-bye.
Nice to see you.
This morning was amazing. Absolutely incredible.
Thanks, Amanda. Nice to see you.
Happy to see
you. Hi, Alice.
Bye, Boog. Bye, Miss Money. Bye, Ellie.
Bye, Ellie.
Bye, Shobit.
Bye, Ellie.
Okay.